match for the power I'd recently discovered in myself. One of the things holding me back from testing it was that I knew if I did, I'd not only be burning a bridge, I'd be torching the ground I stood on with all She-Seers. Whether or not they agreed with Rowena's decisions, the majority of the She-Seers were intensely loyal to her. Another thing holding me back was that I wasn't sure where that power came from, and was reluctant to betray anything the Grand Mistress might use against me. Besides, what if all the runes I had were parasites of some kind that could inflict further damage on our world? Still, there was another weapon at my disposal I could try. I'd become proficient at voice, and could easily explain it away as a druid art Barons had taught me. "I need answers, Danny. You with me?"
"Ro will blow a gasket if she catches us,"
she warned. Her eyes sparkled, and she was beginning to blur with excitement. I smiled. I loved this kid. We were okay with each other again. One more pain in my heart was gone. "Oh, she's definitely going to catch us. I intend to have a few words with that old woman." If things went south, I'd keep my power in check and let Danny whiz us out. Or I'd summon Valaine. "Want to come along?"
"Ha! You're kidding, right? Wouldn't miss this gig for the world."
22. Even with Danny whizzing us in at super speed, they found us in the south wing in less than 3 minutes. Ro must have laid new wards to sense us and tip her off if we entered the Abbey. I wondered how she did it, if it was like witchcraft and required a pinch of hair, blood, or nail. I could too easily see the old woman standing over a bubbling cauldron, dropping items in, stirring away, cackling with delight. However she'd accomplished it, a group of She-Seers led by Cat confronted us at the intersection of two corridors before we were even halfway to the forbidden library I'd broken into the last time I was here. I'd left a group searching it while I tried to get past a holographic guardian down yet another seemingly dead-end hall in the Abbey. Like us, they wore snug clothes no book could hide under. I imagined that between the Shades and the She-Sidhu's visit, things were pretty tense at the Abbey.
"What's in the bag?" Cat demanded.
I opened the translucent plastic grocery bag I'd brought and showed her there was no book inside it. Once they were assured I wasn't carrying concealed, they got right to the point.
"The Grand Mistress said you were dead, she did,"
Jo said.
"Then she said you weren't, but we were to be thinking of you as dead because you'd taken the Lord Master's side, just like Alina,"
accused Claire.
"But you aren't Alina's sister at all, are you now?"
Mary demanded.
"After we visited Nana O'Reilly," Cat said, "I spoke with Rowena and she confirmed what Nana told us about the Haven Mistress being an O'Connor. But she said Isla died a few nights after the book escaped, and it was believed Alina died as well, although the girl's body was never found. Regardless, Alina was her only child, so Mac, who are you?"
Dozens of She-Seers stared at me, waiting for my answer.
"She don't have to answer to you," Danny said belligerently. "Bunch of sheep can't even see what's in front of your own eyes."
"Sure we can. We see a She-Seer that supposedly doesn't exist. Where is the sun as it should?" Cat said.
"Then there's you, so determined to defend her. Why would you be doing that?"
Danny compressed her lips into a thin line and folded her skinny arms over her chest. She tapped a foot and stared up at the ceiling.
"Just saying, things ain't always bad just 'cause you don't understand 'em or ain't like 'em. That's like thinking anybody who's smarter or faster is dangerous just 'cause they got more brains or quicker feet. Ain't fair. Peeps can't help how they're born."
"We're standing here waiting to understand."
Cat turned her level gray gaze on me.
"Help us, Mac."
"Is it true?" I said point blank. "Is emotional telepathy your She-Seer gift?" Suddenly self-conscious, Cat tucked her shirt in and smoothed her hair.
"Where did you hear that?"
I withdrew Darok's notes from the grocery bag, stepped forward and offered them to her, but she was going to have to meet me halfway to take them. I hadn't brought all of what I'd crammed into my pack, just enough for a gesture of good faith. I didn't give a rat's ass what Rowena thought of me, but I wanted in with the She-Seers.
Part of me hated this abbey, where Rowan had tightly controlled the She-Seer's power, yet had failed to control the greatest responsibility she'd had. Part of me still wanted to belong. My bipolar was showing again. I found these when I was undercover. I stressed the word. With Darok. I searched his penthouse. He had notes on everything, including Unseelie I've never heard of or seen. I thought you might want to add them to your libraries. They'll be useful when you encounter new casts. I don't know how he got the scoop on what happens inside these walls, but he must have had someone on the inside. Perhaps he still has. Danny had told me someone had sabotaged the wards outside my cell when I was prior. You might find it interesting that he says Rowena's gift is mental coercion, I said pointedly.
How do we know these papers aren't some load of malarkey you've been making up yourself?
Mary demanded. You decide. I'm through defending myself. You haven't answered my question, Kat said. Who are you, Mac? I met her serene gray gaze. Kat was the only one that I trusted to think things through and make a wise decision. The slender brunette was tougher than she looked, level-headed, calm in times of stress, and I hoped one day she would replace Rowena as Grand Mistress of the Abbey. The position didn't require the most powerful She-Seer, like the Haven did, but the wisest, a woman with long-term goals and vision. Kat exuded quiet capability, an almost complete lack of ego, a quick mind and a solid heart. She had my vote all the way. If she was indeed emotionally telepathic, she would sense my sincerity when I told her as much of the truth as I knew myself. I don't know who I am, Kat. I really did believe I was Alina's sister. I'm still not convinced I'm not. Nana said I looked like Isla. Apparently enough that I looked the way she expected Alina to appear grown up. However, like you, I've heard that Isla didn't have a second child. If you think that upsets you, imagine what it does to me. I gave her a bitter smile. First, I find out I'm adopted. Then I find out I don't exist. But here's a shocker for you, Kat. According to Darok's notes, he knew the origin of the She-Seers. Supposedly... Three shrill blasts of a whistle split the air, and the She-Seer snapped to attention.
Enough!
Rowena commanded, as she sailed up behind them, dressed in a smart, fitted suit of royal blue, her long white hair braided in a regal crown around her head. There were pearls at her ears and throat, and tiny seed pearls on the chain that draped from her glasses.
That will be all. Restrain the traitor and bring her with me. And Danielle, Megan O'Malley, if you think for one bloody moment to whisk her away, think twice. Be very, very careful, Danielle.
Turning to Kat, she said,
I gave an order. Obey it now.
Kat looked at Rowena. Does she speak the truth? Is your gift mental coercion? Rowena's brows drew together over her fine, pointed nose. Blue eyes blazed.
You would believe her lies about the claims of an ex-fae over what I have told you. Oh, and I thought you wise, Kat, perhaps the wisest of all my daughters. You have never failed me. Do not disappoint me now.
My gift is emotional telepathy, Kat said. He was right about that.
The best liar knows to salt his deception with an occasional truth, to lend the flavor of credibility. I have not coerced my daughters. I never will. I say it's time for truth all around, Grandmistress,
Joe said.
There are only 358 of us left. We're weary of losing our sisters.
We've lost more than our sisters, Mary said.
We're losing hope. I agree, said Claire.
Yes,
murmured Josie and the rest. Kat nodded.
Tell us what Darok believed about the origin of our order, Mac.
Rowena glared down her nose at me.
Don't you dare!
I felt it then, a subtle pressure on my mind, and I wondered if she'd been using it on me whenever I'd been around her since the night we'd met. Regardless, it was no threat to me now.
I'd learned to resist voice, and the pressure coming from her was nothing compared to that. I'd been on my knees, cutting myself with Barron's. I'd had a hell of a teacher. I ignored Rowena and addressed the She-Seers. Darok believed it was not the Seelie Queen who brought the Shisadu to the Abbey to be interred so long ago. Rowena shook her head.
Don't do this. They need faith. They've precious little else. It's not your place to take it from them. You've no confirmation of his claims.
I felt the subtle pressure grow stronger as she tried to cow me. You knew. You've always known. And like so many other things, you never told them.
If you believe a seed of evil exists within you, it may consume you.
She searched my face.
Oh, surely you understand that.
One might also argue that if you believe a seed of evil exists within you, you have the opportunity to learn to control it, I countered.
One might also argue ignorance is safety.
Safety is a fence, and fences are for sheep. I would rather die at 22, knowing the truth, than live in a cage of lies for 100 years.
You sound so certain of that. Were it put to the test, I wonder where you would truly stand.
Illusion is no substitute for life, I said.
Allow them their sacred history, Rowena said.
What if it's not so sacred? I said.
Tell us, Claire demanded. We have a right to know.
Rowena turned her head away and looked at me from the side, down her nose as if I were too distasteful to regard directly.
I knew from the moment I saw you that you would try to destroy us, Michaela, or whoever you are. I should have put you down then.
Cat inhaled sharply.
She's a person, not an animal, Rowena. We don't put people down.
Right, Ro, Danny said tightly. We don't put peeps down.
I glanced at Danny. She was staring at Rowena, eyes narrowed and filled with hatred. Oh, yes, it was long past time for truth in these walls, whether we liked those truths or not. Maybe Darok was wrong. Maybe what he'd written was mere conjecture. But we couldn't question something we refused to face. And unquestioned suspicions had a nasty tendency to grow. Didn't I know? One was expanding exponentially in my head, in my heart, even now.
Rowena has a point, I conceded. I don't know whether or not Darok was right, but you should know that Barron suspects it too.
Tell us, Cat demanded.
I drew a deep breath. I knew how this had affected me, and I hadn't spent my entire life indoctrinated into the She-Seer credo. I'd skimmed Darok's notes again before I'd brought them. Farther into the pages, he'd written it not as a bulleted supposition, but as a fact. The Unseelie King created the She-Seers. Darok believed it was the Unseelie King himself who trapped the Shisadu and created a prison for it, here, on our world. He believed the king also created prison guards. I hesitated, then added grimly, She-Seers. According to Darok, it was the last caste of Unseelie the Dark King created. You could have heard a pin drop. Nobody said anything. Nobody moved. Now that that was out, I turned my attention to Rowena. I had no doubt she knew what I needed to know. Tell me what the prophecy says, Rowena. She sniffed and turned away.
We can do this the easy way or the hard way. Bollocks, child. We won't be doing this at all. Tell me what the prophecy says, Rowena.
I said again, and this time I used voice to command her. It resonated, echoing back at me off the Abbey's stone walls. She-Seers rustled and murmured. Eyes bulging, hands fisted, Rowena began to spit out words in a language I didn't understand. I was about to order her to speak in English when Cat cleared her throat and moved forward. Her face was pale,
but her voice was calm and determined when she said, "Don't do this, Mac. You needn't coerce her. We found the book containing the prophecies in the forbidden library you opened. We can tell you all you need to know." She held out her hand for the papers I'd brought. "May I?" I gave them to her. She searched my gaze. "Do you believe Derek was right?" "I don't know. I could voice Rowena and see what she knows. I could interrogate her thoroughly." Cat looked back at Rowena, who was still speaking. "It's old Irish Gaelic," she told me. "Took a bit of time, but we've translated it. Come with us. But hush her, will you?" She shivered. "It's not right, Mac. It's like what you did to Nana. Our wills must be our own." "You can say that, knowing she's probably been using coercion on all of you for years. Her power doesn't begin to compare to yours. There is seduction, and there is rape. Some of us suspected she had compelling leadership abilities. Still, she made wise and fair decisions." "She lies to you," I said. Cat was far more forgiving than I was. "Withholds. A small but important difference, Mac. She was right about faith. Had we been told as children we might be unseelie, we may have walked a very different path. Release her. I'm asking you." I looked at Cat a long moment. I wondered if she had something besides emotional telepathy, a kind of emotional balm she could apply if she chose. As I looked into her eyes, my anger at Rowena seemed to diminish, and I could see a grain of truth in what Cat had said. Alina and Christian had called them necessary lies. I wondered if someone had told me when I was, say, 9 or 10 that I was unseelie, if I would have thought I was destined to be bad and never even tried to be good. Would I have thought, what's the point? I sighed. Life was so complicated. "Forget the prophecy, Rowena," I commanded. Instantly, she stopped speaking. Cat raised a brow and looked amused. "Is that truly what you wished her to do?" I winced.
"Don't forget it. Just stop talking about it."
But it was too late. I'd voiced her to forget it, and I could tell by the look of disdain on the old woman's face that every word of it had been wiped from her mind.
"You are a danger to us all," she said haughtily.
I raked my hands through my hair. Voice was tricky.
"My daughters will tell you of the prophecy I no longer recall, thanks to your ineptitude at druid arts. They will tell you freely, without coercion. But you will consent to my terms. You work with our order and no one else. If I recall the shape of it, we know what we need. You will track it. We will do the rest with..."
She trailed off, rubbing her forehead. "The 5 druids and the stones," Cat supplied. "You found the prophecy and it actually tells us what to do?" I said. Cat nodded. "I want to see it." We gathered in the Forbidden Library, a small windowless room that had failed to impress me when I'd first found it, spoiled as I was by Baron's books and baubles. Dozens of lamps were positioned around the low-ceilinged stone room, bathing it in a soft amber glow, bright enough to keep shades at bay, but diffuse enough to minimize damage to ancient fading pages. Now, as I glanced around, it affected me differently than it had the first time. In my absence, she-seers had organized the dusty chaos, dug old tomes out of trunks, carried in bookcases, and arranged things for easy access and cataloging. I love books. They're in my blood. I wandered the dry stone room, stopping here and there to pass my hands over fragile covers I longed to touch but wasn't willing to risk harming. "We're copying and updating everything," Cat said. "For millennia, only the Haven was permitted access to these histories and records. In a few more centuries, many of them would have been dust." She gave Rowena a look of gentle rebuke. "Some of them already are."
"Oh,
And if you one day carry the scepter of my position, Katrina, Rowena said sternly, you'll come to appreciate the limits of a single lifetime and the difficult choices that must be made.
The prophecy, I said impatiently. Cat motioned us all to a large oval table. We pulled out chairs and tucked in around it. We translated as best we can.
Some of the words aren't old Irish Gaelic, Joe said, but appear to have been invented by a person self-schooled.
Joe's a translator, Danny said, with equal measures of pride and disdain. She thinks research is fun.
As fucking if! Language! Rowena snapped.
I blinked at her. She was still on that kick. I'd gotten so inured to fecking that it hardly even seemed like a cuss word to me anymore.
Ain't your problem no more. You ain't the boss of me.
Danny gave Rowena a hard stare.
Oh, and you're so happy on your own, are you, Danielle O'Malley? Your mum would rise from her grave were she to ken her daughter left the abbey, consorts with a fey prince and others of dubious blood, and takes orders from none at the tender age of 10 and 3.
Don't give me no tender age bunk, Danny growled. Sides, I'm going to be 10 and 4 soon.
She beamed around the table.
February 20th. Don't forget. I like chocolate cake. Not yellow. Hate fruit in my cakes. Chocolate on chocolate. The more the better.
If you two can't be quiet, leave, I said. The book Cat opened was surprisingly small, thin, clad in dull brown leather and tied with a worn leather cord. Morena Bean lived in these walls a bit over 1,000 years ago. A she-seer whose gift was vision? I guessed. Cat shook her head.
No, a washerwoman for the abbess. They called her Mad Maury for her ramblings, ridiculed her insistence that dreams were as real as those events we lived. Mad Maury believed life was not a thing shaped of past or present, but possibles. She believed that every moment was a new stone tossed into a lock, causing ripples that those revered among women for whom she toiled were too dull of mind to see. She claimed to behold the entire lock, each and every stone. She said she was not mad, merely overwhelmed. Cat smiled faintly. Much of what she's written makes no sense whatsoever. If it has come to pass, we can't tie it to current times or understand her signs. If all she penned in these pages is supposed to pass in order, we are only at the beginning of her predictions. A mere 20 pages in, she tells of the escape of the Shisadu. She actually calls it that? Nothing in here is ever that clear. She writes of a great evil that slumbers beneath our abbey, that will escape, aided by one in the highest circle. A washerwoman knew of the Haven? I exclaimed.
Like as not, she eavesdropped on her betters, Rowena pronounced.
I rolled my eyes.
Elitist to the core, aren't you?
Cat removed a sheet of yellow legal pad upon which Joe had scribbled a translation and handed it to me.
There's a great deal of rambling before she gets to the point, Joe told me. This was a washerwoman circa 1000 AD who'd never seen a car, a plane, a cell phone, an earthquake, and had no words to describe things. She goes on and on about in the day of, in an effort to define when this event would take place. I focused on translating only what pertained to the Shisadu itself. I'm still working on the rest of her predictions, but it's slow going.
I scanned it, eager to find proof of my heroic role, or at least no proof of a villainous one. The beast will break free and scourge the earth. It cannot be destroyed. It cannot be damaged. An unholy tree, it will grow new leaves. It must be woven, walled, caged. From the mightiest bloodlines come two. If the one dies young, the other who longs for death will hunt it. Jewels from icy cliffs laid to the east, west, north, and south will make the three faces one. Five of the hidden barrier will chant as the jewels are laid, and one who burns pure, burned on a pyre, will return it to the place from which it escaped. If the inhabited, possessed,
not sure of this word. Transformed seals it in the heart of darkness. It will slumber with one eye open.
Dude! Sucky! Who writes that kind of drivel?
Danny exclaimed over my shoulder. Joe sniffed.
I did the best I could, what with the woman not spelling a single word the same way twice.
Would it have killed her to be a little more specific? Danny groused. She probably thought she was being specific, I said. The nuances of language changed constantly, especially dialect and lingo.
Really, Danny, who'd be able to translate dude, sucky, 1,000 years from now?
But it wasn't only language that compounded things. Communicating a dream was difficult. I'd been so troubled by my cold place dreams in middle school that I'd finally told Daddy I was having a recurring nightmare. He'd encouraged me to write it down, and together we'd tried to decide what it meant. Logical, pragmatic Jack Lane believed the brain was like a vast computer, and dreams were the conscious mind's way of backing up and storing the day's events in the subconscious, filing away memories and organizing lessons. But he'd also believed that if a dream kept recurring, it suggested the mind or heart was having a problem dealing with something. He'd proposed that my dream reflected a child's natural fear of losing her mother, but even at 10, that hadn't quite rung true for me. Now I wondered if Daddy had secretly worried that the recurring dream had something to do with the biological mother I'd lost, that perhaps I'd been trapped somewhere cold, forced to watch her die. That was what I'd been thinking, too, until my recent experience in the White Mansion with the concubine and king, when I'd realized she was the woman from my dreams. Coupled with my latest dream, where watching her die felt like I had perished. Now I was troubled by an entirely different possibility. Regardless, when I'd attempted to write down my cold place dream, it had come out looking a lot like this prophecy. Vague, dreamy, and confusing as hell.
Besides, we think we have it sorted out, Joe said. The word Keltar means magic mantle. The clan of the Keltar, or McKeltar, served as druids to the Tuatha De Danann thousands of years ago, when the Fae still lived among us. When the compact was negotiated and the Fae retired from our world, they left the Keltar in charge of honoring the compact and protecting the old lore.
And we've learned there are 5 male druids living, said Mary.
Dagus, Drustan, Cian, Christian and Christopher, Joe said. We've already dispatched a message to them, asking them to join us here.
Unfortunately, Christian was going to be a problem. You said you knew where the 4 stones are, Kat said. I nodded.
So all we need is you to tell us where the book is, one of the Keltar to pick it up and bring it here, the 4 stones laid around it, and the 5 of them to reinter it with whatever binding song or chant they know. It sounds like one of them will know whatever needs to be done at the end. I spoke to one of their wives, and she seemed to understand what was meant by the inhabited or possessed.
Reinter it where? I demanded, watching Rowena closely. It looked as if my only role in the entire matter was to track it. This entire time I'd been feeling as if I had to do it all, but my part in the prophecy was really very small. There was nothing in the prophecy about me that was bad. Just that Alina might die, and I would long for death. Been there, done that. I felt a huge weight slip from my shoulders. There were 5 other people responsible for the bulk of it. It was all I could do not to punch the air with a fist and shout, "Yes!"
Where it was before, she said coolly.
And where's that?
Down the corridor Danny said you couldn't pass, Joe said.
The Grand Mistress shot her a quelling look.
Can you get past the woman who guards it? I asked Rowena.
Don't fuss yourself with my business, girl. I'll do my part. You do yours.
Valaine couldn't get past it either.
I fished, wondering why.
No Fae can.
Smugness dripped from her words, and I knew she'd had something to do with that.
Who is the woman that guards the hall?
Joe answered. The last known leader of the Haven.
Rowan, as current Haven, was cloaked in secrecy.
You mean my mother?
Isla was not your mother. She had only one child,
Rowena snapped.
Then who am I?
Precisely,
she managed to try, convict and execute me with the single word. The prophecy said there were two of us. One dies young, the other longs for death. Had she and I been alone, I wasn't sure how far I would have gone to force answers from her. But I knew this much. I wouldn't have liked myself when it was over.
Like as not, a washerwoman ate a bad bit of fish, had dreams on an uneasy stomach, and declared herself a prophet. The word is bloodlines, plural.
Her spelling was appalling.
There are extra letters in many words, Joe said.
You'll need to neutralize those particular wards, I said coolly.
There will be no Fae present when we seal the abomination away.
Valaine won't give me the stone, I told her. There's no way he'll just hand it over.
Spread your legs for another Fae and whore it out of him, she said flatly. Then you will turn them all over to us. There is no need for you to be present when the ritual is performed.
My cheeks pinked, and it infuriated me. This old woman got under my skin like nobody else could. I wondered if my mother, Isla, I corrected hastily, had felt the same. I'd been so elated to discover the identity of my biological mother, and now, with everyone telling me she'd had only one child, I felt as if not only my mother had been stolen away from me, but maybe even my sister as well. I'd never felt so alone in all my life.
Feck you, old woman, I said. Don't waste it on me, she retorted. I'm not the one with the stone.
What was it you said to me once?
Wait, I remember. I used voice at the full extent of my power when I said, Hod your waist, Rowena.
Mac, Cat warned. She's allowed to call me names, but I can't tell her to shut up.
Sure, and you can on equal ground without compulsion. You rely on such powers in times of no need. You run the risk of losing what makes you human. You've a hot temper and a hotter heart. You need to cool them both.
You may speak, Rowena.
Voice had never sounded so pissy when barons used it.
Your loyalty must be first to us, the Sheathseers, she said instantly. Do you want the walls back up, Rowena?
I demanded.
Oh, and of course I do.
Then the Seelie will have to be involved. Once the book is reinterred, the Queen will need to come search it for the Song of Making.
The Song of Making is in the Shisedu?
She exclaimed. The Queen believes fragments of it are, and from them she can recreate the entire song.
And so certain you are, you'll wish that to happen.
You don't want the Unseelie locked away again?
Aye, I do. But they've been without the Song of Making since long before we encountered them. If the Fae regain that ancient melody, their power will once again be limitless. Have you any idea what those times might have been like? Are you so certain the human race would survive it?
I blinked at her in startled silence. I'd been so focused on getting the Unseelie re-imprisoned and sending the Seelie back to their court that I'd not deeply examined the possible repercussions of restoring the Song of Making to the Fae. It must have shown on my face, because Rowena's tone softened when she said,
Oh, so you're not a complete fool.
I gave her a look.
I've had a lot on my plate, and I sure learned voice fast, didn't I?
But we have other, more immediate problems. I know Christian McKeltar, and he's missing. He's been trapped inside the Silver since Halloween. We can't do a thing until we find him.
In the Silvers? Cat exclaimed. We can't go in the Silvers. None can.
I was there myself recently. It can be done. Rowena appraised me.
You've been in the Silvers?
I stood in the Hall of All Days, I said, and was surprised to hear a touch of pride in my voice. I finally allowed myself to ask the question that had been gnawing at me ever since I'd heard there were two prophecies, and in one of them, I supposedly doomed the world. Was it really about me, or was it as vague as this one? I heard there were two prophecies. Where's the other one? Cat and Joe exchanged uneasy glances. The washerwoman rambled till the end of the page about how many stones there were to throw into a lock at any given moment, and that some were more possible than others, Joe said. She claimed she dreamed of dozens such stones, but only two seemed likely. The first could save us. The second was far more likely to doom us. I nodded impatiently. I know, so what's the second prophecy? Cat handed me the slim volume. Turn the page. I can't read old Irish Gaelic. Just turn it. I did, because the ink she'd used had stained through the sheets of vellum bound into the thin journal. Mad Morrie had written on only one side of the page. The next page was missing. Small pieces of parchment and torn threads protruded from the binding. Someone tore it out? I said disbelievingly. A good while ago. This is one of the first volumes we catalogued once you removed the wards protecting the library. We found it open, on a table, with this page and several others missing. We suspect it was whoever destroyed the wards outside your cell when you were prior, Cat said. There's a traitor in the abbey, Joe said, and whoever it is either translates as well as me or took random pages. To have bypassed my wards and gained access to this library, Rowena added grimly. It could only have been one of my trusted haven. I parked the Viper behind the bookstore and sat staring down into what was once the city's biggest dark zone, crammed full of shades, with one giant amorphous life-sucker in particular that had seemed to enjoy threatening me as much as I'd enjoyed threatening it. I wondered where it was now. I hoped I would get the chance to hunt it and try out some of my newfound runes, destroy it once and for all, because as large as it had been before it escaped on the night the lights went out in Dublin, I imagined it could devour small towns in a single swallow now. I glanced at the garage. I looked at the bookstore. I sighed. I missed him. Ironically, now that I'd become obsessed with wondering who and what I was less worried about who and what he was. I was beginning to understand why he'd always insisted I'd judge him by his actions. What if the She-Seers really were unseelie? Did that make us innately bad? Or did that just mean we, like the rest of the human race, had to choose whether to be good or evil? I got out of the car, locked it, and turned for the bookstore.
Baron say you could drive his Viper,
Lore said behind me. Hand on the doorknob, I turned, dangling the key ring from my finger. Possession, 9/10 of the law. The corners of his mouth twitched.
You've been around him too much.
Where's Fade? Did you catch him?
Book left him dead.
And just when do you expect him back? I said sweetly.
Report. What did you learn at the Abbey?
You think I'm reporting to you now?
Until Barons gets back and takes control of you again.
Is that what you think? He takes control of me? My temper flared.
You'd better hope so, because if he doesn't, we kill you.
The threat was delivered tonelessly, with utter disinterest. It was chilling.
We don't exist. That's the way it always has been. That's the way it always will be. If people find out about us, we kill them. It's not personal.
Well, excuse the hell out of me. If you try to kill me and I decide to take it pretty damned personally.
We're not trying to, at the moment. Report.
I snorted and turned to enter the store. He was behind me, his hand on my hand on the doorknob, his face in my hair, lips close to my ear. He inhaled.
You don't smell like other people, Mac. I wonder why. I'm not like barons. Riordan is downright civilized. I don't suffer Castillo's problems, and Fade is still having fun. Death is my morning coffee. I like blood, and the sound of bones breaking, it turns me on. Tell me what you learned about the prophecy, and next time, bring me the seer's book, if you want your parents to remain intact. You will cooperate only with us. You will lie to everyone else. We own you. Don't make me give you a lesson. There are things that can break you. You wouldn't believe the madness certain kinds of pain can induce.
I turned to face him. For a moment he didn't let me, made me push against his body and struggle to move. His body was every bit as electric as Baron's and Riordan's, and I knew he was enjoying it, quite possibly on a level of primitive carnality I didn't understand. "There are things that can break you," he'd said. I almost laughed. He had no idea the thing that had broken me most completely was my belief that Baron's was dead. One look at Lore's eyes, and I decided I would wait until Baron's was back before pressing any issues with him. "You think Baron's has a weakness for me," I said. "That's what worries you."
"It is forbidden."
"He despises me. He thinks I slept with Darok, remember?"
"He cares that you slept with Darok."
"He cared that I burned his rug, too. He gets a little pissy about those things he likes to think of as his property."
"You two drive me bugfuck. Prophecy, talk."
He interrogated me for nearly half an hour before he was satisfied. I let myself into my fourth floor bedroom, weary to the bone. My room was a mess, protein bar wrappers, empty water bottles and clothes everywhere. I washed my face, brushed my teeth, slipped into pajamas and was about to crawl into bed when I remembered the tarot card from last night that the faceless guy had given me. I dug in the pocket of my coat and pulled it out. The back of it was black, covered with silver symbols and runes that looked a lot like the silver etchings I'd glimpsed on one of the three forms of the Shisadu, the one of an ancient black tome with heavy locks. I turned it over. The world was inscribed at the top. It was a beautiful card, framed in crimson and black. A woman stood in profile on a white landscape tinged with blue that looked icy, forbidding. Against the backdrop of a starry sky, a planet revolved in front of her face. But she was looking away, not at the world at all, but staring off into the distance. Or was she looking at someone who wasn't on the card? I had no idea what the world card was supposed to mean in a tarot reading. I'd never had my cards read. Mac 1.0 had considered having your future divined through tarot cards, as ridiculous as trying to dial up a dead relative on a Ouija board. Mac 5.0 would happily take any help she could get from any source. I studied it. Why had the faceless guy left it for me? What was I supposed to learn from it? That I needed to look at the world? That I was distracted by other things and people and not seeing clearly? That I really was the person holding the fate of the world in my hands? No matter how I looked at it, the card implied way too much responsibility. The prophecy had made it clear that my involvement wasn't much at all. I tucked it between the pages of the book on my bedstand, got into bed and pulled the covers over my head. Once again I dreamed of the sad, beautiful woman, and once again I had the oddest sense of duality, seeing from her eyes and mine, feeling her sorrow and my confusion. "Come, you must hurry, you must know." Urgency gripped me. "Only you can, no other way in." Her words echoed off the cliffs, growing fainter with each rebound. "Trying to, for so long, so hard." Then an unseelie prince was there beside her, us. But he was not one of the three I knew, one of the three that had raped me. It was the fourth, the one I'd never seen.
In that strange way of knowing things in dreams, I knew it was war.
Run! Hide!
She screamed. I couldn't. My feet were rooted to the ground, my eyes locked on him. He was far more beautiful than the other Unseelie princes, and far more terrifying. Like the others, he looked into me, not at me, and his gaze felt like razors slicing through my most private hopes and fears. I knew that war's specialty was not merely to turn opposing factions, races, or populations upon one another, but to find sides within a person and turn them upon themselves. Here was the ultimate trickster, the destroyer, and I understood that death wasn't the one to be feared. War was the one that laid waste to lives. Death was just the cleanup guy, the janitor, the final act. Though the same black torque writhed around War's neck, it was threaded with silver. Though kaleidoscopic colors rushed beneath his skin, a nimbus of gold surrounded him, and at his back, I glimpsed the flash of black feathers. War was winged.
You are too late,
he said. I was jarred awake the next morning by an unaccustomed noise and sat up, looking around. Twice more I heard the sound before I figured out what it was. Someone was throwing a rock against my window. I rubbed my eyes and stretched. Coming, I groused and tossed back the covers. I figured it was Danny. Since cell phone service still wasn't back up and the store had no doorbell, it was the only way she could get my attention, short of breaking in. I pushed aside the drape and glanced out into the alley. Valaine reclined on the hood of Baron's Viper, leaning back against the windshield. Though supposedly the car wasn't mine, we'd see about that. I instantly assessed Valaine for rivets or any other abrasive elements that might mar the paint job. I love sports cars. All that muscle just does it for me. I decided it was a safe bet the soft white towel knotted loosely at his waist wasn't going to scratch anything. His perfect body was dusted gold, and his eyes were sunshine sparkling on diamonds. I pushed the window up. Chilly air wafted in. The temperature had dropped. Low-hanging clouds had moved in. It was once again cold and gloomy in Dublin. He lifted a cup of Starbucks.
Good morning, Michaela. I brought you coffee.
I eyed it with equal parts suspicion and longing. You found an open Starbucks?
I sifted to a store in New York. I ground the beans and made it myself. I even, how do you say, frothed the milk.
He held up some packets.
Splenda or raw sugar?
My mouth watered. Raw sugar and caffeine in the morning. Only sex could make it better.
Is Baron's around?
He said. I shook my head.
Where is he?
Busy for the day. I lied.
Anything pressing on your agenda?
I narrowed my eyes. Valaine wasn't talking like he normally did. Usually he spoke with great formality. Today he sounded almost human. I eyed the towel, trying to decide if there might be a book beneath it. It was possible. Could you swap that towel for something like, well, skin-tight shorts? He was suddenly nude. Definitely no book. Put your towel back on, I said hastily. Why are you talking funny?
Am I? I endeavor to learn from humanity, Michaela. I thought you would find me more appealing. How am I doing? No, wait. I am appropriating human contractions. How am I doing?
He was still nude. Towel. Now. And you contracted the wrong words. I am becomes I'm. How am does not become how'm. But really, it's okay. Contractions don't sound right coming out of your mouth anyway. He flashed me a dazzling smile.
You like me as the prince I am. That is promising. I came to take you for a day at the beach. Tropical surf and sandbars, coconuts and palm trees, sand and sun. Come.
He offered a hand. It wasn't the only part of him extended in my direction. I'm surrounded by intensely sexual men at every turn.
Towel!
I demanded. I bit my lower lip. I shouldn't. I had no right. I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. I even had the tarot card to prove it.
I do not know why you do not enjoy seeing me nude. I enjoy seeing you nude.
Do you want me to go to the beach with you or not? His iridescent eyes were brilliant.
You have accepted my invitation. I see it in your eyes. They have taken on a languorous sheen. I find it arousing.
But not to a beach in Faerie, I said. No illusion. Can you sift us to somewhere like Rio, in the human world, where only human hours will pass?
Command me. I am yours, Michaela. We shall spend a finite number of human hours, to be specified by you.
I was fatally flawed. I couldn't say no. I'll take that coffee now. I reached out the window for it, expecting him to float it up or something.
I am unable to oblige. The paranoid ones' wards are still active. They keep me several feet from the building.
But not off his car, I said, a smile tugging at my lips. Barons would go nuts if he knew Valaine had touched his viper. And stretched out on it nude? He'd have an aneurysm.
It is all I can do not to sear my name into the paint. I am afraid you will have to come down for your coffee. It is hot. Make haste.
I ran a brush through my hair, splashed water on my face, slipped into shorts, a tank, and flip-flops, and 10 minutes later, I was in Rio. I can't be on a beach without thinking of Alina. I keep telling myself that when all this is over, I'll ask Valaine to give me an illusion of her again, and we'll spend a day playing volleyball together, listening to tunes and drinking Corona and lime. I'll say goodbye once and for all. I'll let go of the pain and the anger, tuck the wonderful parts of the life we shared into a sacred corner of my soul, and accept living without her. If Barons had truly been dead, and enough time had passed, would I have eventually accepted living without him? I was afraid I never would have. I turned my attention to the Seelie Prince walking beside me. I was glad he'd come to find me this morning. If he hadn't, I would have summoned him with the sensual sting of his name through my tongue. My dreams last night had unsettled me deeply. I had questions, and he was the only one who might have the answers. We walked a short distance down the powdery beach to a pair of silken chaises sunk in white sand, close to the salty spray of the sea. My clothes melted away and were replaced by a hot pink string bikini and a gold belly chain adorned with fiery stones. The beach was deserted. I had no idea if there were no people left or if Valaine had sent them away for privacy. What's with the belly chain? He seemed to have a fondness for them.
When I have sex with you from behind, I will use it to pull you closer, push in deeper.
I opened my mouth and closed it again. I was the idiot that had asked.
And now, whenever you see the gold of it glinting in the sun, you will think about fucking me.
I sank into the chair and tipped my head back, watching birds fly overhead. The soft rush of waves soothed my soul. Baseball cap and sunglasses, please. He reached over and tucked a cap on my head, propped sunglasses on my nose. I looked at him. He was nude again, towel mounded between his legs.
I have found it burns. It is most unpleasant.
Is your skin real? He removed the cloth.
Touch it.
When I made no move to do so, he said,
I regret that you are immune to me. Human seduction of one such as you may take an eon. Yes, Michaela, in this form my skin is every bit as real as yours.
A drink appeared in my hand, a creamy blend of pineapple, coconut, and spiced rum. Tell me about Cruz, I said.
Why?
He interests me.
Why?
It seems he was somehow different from the other Unseelie princes.
The others didn't have names. Why did Cruz? When I first met you, you offered me the cuff of Cruz. Why was it called that? How did Cruz learn to curse the Silvers? There seems to be so much more history about him than any of the other princes. Valaine sighed in perfect human mimicry.
One day, you will wish to talk of me. You will have as many questions of my existence and my place in Fey history. It is majestic, far more so than Cruz's. He was a fledgling prince. I have more to offer.
I tapped my fingers, waiting. He ran his hand along my arm, wove his fingers with mine. His hand was warm and strong and felt just like a real man's. He was seriously putting on the human today.
I have already told you more about ancient Fey history than any human has ever known.
And I still know only the barest sketch of events. You say you want me to see you as a man, to trust you. But trust comes from sharing knowledge and finding common ground.
If others of my race were to discover how much I tell you...
I'll take that chance. Will you? He stared out at the sea, as if seeking wisdom in the turquoise waves. Finally, he said...
As you wish, Michaela. But you must never reveal your knowledge to another Fae.
I understand.
Once the Unseelie King was satisfied that he had sufficiently improved upon the initial imperfect efforts of his experiments that resulted in the lesser castes of Unseelie, he began to replicate the Seelie hierarchy. He created 4 royal houses, dark counterparts to the Seelie royal lines. The House of Cruz was the final one he made. Cruz himself was the last Unseelie ever brought into existence. By the time the king began to work on the 4th royal house, he was a virtuoso at bringing into being his half-life children, even without the Song of Making. Though with their raven hair, black talks, and haunting melodies, they would never pass for Seelie. They were still a match in beauty, eroticism, and majesty for the highest-ranking Light Fae. Some say the king stopped with Cruz because he knew if he made even one more of his children, much like in your own mythologies, the child would kill the father and usurp his kingdom.
I nodded, remembering my Oedipus from college.
In the beginning, the king rejoiced in Cruz and shared his knowledge freely. He had found a worthy companion, one to work with in his efforts to make his beloved concubine Fae. Cruz was clever, learned quickly, and invented many things. The cuff was one of his first creations. He made it as a gift for the king to give his concubine, so that when she desired his presence, she had only to touch the cuff and think of him to make it so. It also protected her from certain threats. The king was delighted with the token. Together they forged several amulets to grant her the gift of weaving illusion. The king alone created the final one he bestowed upon his beloved. Some say she could deceive anyone with illusions woven from it, even him. He gave Cruz greater access to his studies, his libraries, and his laboratories.
But how did you get Cruz's cuff?
My queen gave it to me.
How did she get it?
I assume it was taken from Cruz when he was killed, then passed from queen to queen to be protected.
So while the king was trusting Cruz with everything he knew, the prince decided to overthrow him and steal his concubine? I said. I couldn't keep the note of condemnation out of my voice.
From whom did you hear that?
I hesitated.
Trust must be reciprocal, Michaela.
He chided. I saw Christian in the Silvers. He said he'd learned that Cruz hated the king, wanted his concubine, and cursed the Silvers to keep the king away from her. He told me Cruz planned to take the king's woman and all the worlds inside the Silvers for himself. Valaine shook his head, tawny hair shimmering in the sun.
It was not so simple. Things rarely are. To use a human word, Cruz loved the king, first and above all. The creator of the Unseelie is a being of unbearable perfection. If he is indeed Fey, he is from the most ancient, most pure line that ever existed. Some say he is the father of all. Some say he had outlived hundreds of queens before the time of the queen he slew. Many of the forms he can take are beyond even Fey ability to absorb. He has been described as having enormous black wings that can enfold the entire Unseelie court. Were he to attempt to take human form, he would have to occupy multiple bodies and divide facets of himself. He is too vast to be contained in a single mortal vessel.
I shivered again. I'd seen the hint of those wings in the White Mansion. I'd felt the concubine's awareness of them, had empathically shared her fascination with their feathery touch on her naked skin. I thought the queen was the most powerful of your race.
The queen is heir to the magic of our people. It is a different thing. That magic has never accepted a male of the true race. Although...
Although what? He gave me a sideways look from beneath his lids.
I tell you too many things.
He sighed.
And enjoy it too much. It has been a long time since I knew another worthy of confidences. There is an ancient myth that, should all the contenders for the matriarchal throne be no more, the magic would likely gravitate toward the most dominant male of our race. Some say our rulers are your Janus head, your yin and yang. The king is the strength of our people, the queen is wisdom. Strength draws from brute force, wisdom draws from true power. In harmony, the king and queen lead a united court. Opposed, we war. We have been opposed since the day the king killed the queen.
But other queens came along. Couldn't the king make peace?
He did not try. Again he abandoned his children. Upon finding his concubine dead, through his act of atonement, he did what he had sworn never to do. By pouring all his dark knowledge into the pages of an ensorcelled tome, he inadvertently created his most powerful child yet. Then he vanished. It is rumored among Seelie and Unseelie alike that he has been trying to, as you humans would say about a lame horse, put it down ever since. The hunter that killed Darok was allegedly the king's own for hundreds of thousands of years. It carried him from world to world, hunting his nemesis. The king, like any fae, loves nothing so much as his own existence. As long as the book is free, he knows no peace. I suspect the Shisadu was amused to take the king's steed. I also suspect that if the king is no longer using that hunter, and that hunter is here in your city, then the king is too.
I gasped. You mean in Dublin? Valaine nodded. In human form?
Who could say? There is no predicting one such as he.
He would have to occupy multiple bodies. I thought of Barons and his eight. I shook my head, rejecting the thought. Back to Cruz, I said hastily.
Why this fascination with Cruz?
I'm trying to understand the chronology. So the king trusted Cruz, worked with him, taught him, and Cruz betrayed him. Why? Valaine's eyes narrowed, and his nostrils flared with cool disdain.
The king's devotion to his concubine was unnatural. It is an aberration in our race. Humans prize monogamy because they have a mere blink of an eye to suffer each other. You are born beneath the shadow of death. It makes you crave unnatural bondage. We do not spend more than a century, perhaps two, with a partner. We drink from the cauldron. We change. We go on. The king did not.
Speaking of which, how do you know any of this?
We have scribes and written histories. As one of the queen's high council, it is my duty to recount our past. On those occasions, she passes an edict. She insists I be able to recite any part at any time.
So the king was faithful, and fairies don't like that. He gave me a look.
Spend 1,000 years with another and tell me it is not unnatural. At the very least, tedious.
Apparently the king didn't think so. I liked the king for that. I liked the idea of true love. Maybe, just maybe, some people were lucky enough to find their other half, the one that completed them, like a Janus head.
The king had become a danger to his children. His court began to talk. They decided to test him. Cruz would seduce the king, turn his obsession from the concubine, make him abandon his single-minded focus on the mortal.
Is the king bisexual? Valaine gave me a blank look. I thought the Fae were gender-specific.
Ah, You refer to who fucks whom. And are we, how do you say it, monosexual?
Heterosexual, I said. Hearing Verlaine say the word fuck in his musical, sensual voice was foreplay in and of itself. I took a sip of my drink, hung my leg over my chair, and cooled a toe in the surf.
When I speak of fae seduction, it is different from human lust. It is the captivation of another's...
He seemed to be struggling for words.
Humans do not have an appropriate word. Very psyche? That which is all one is? Cruz was to become the king's favored, replacing the mortal with whom he'd so long been obsessed, who was not even of our kind. Cruz was to make the king once again enamored of our race. When the king returned his attention to the Court of Shadows, he would raise them to their rightful place in the light with the others of their race. His halflings were weary of hiding. They wanted to meet their brethren. They wanted to taste the life their counterparts enjoyed. They wanted the king to fight for them, make the queen accept them, to unify the courts into one. They felt all was as it should be. The queen was the wise and true leader of the Seelie. The king was the strong and proud leader of the Unseelie. They were a Janushet, complete, if only the king and queen would let them live together as one.
Did the Seelie feel the same? I couldn't imagine they did.
The Seelie were completely unaware the Unseelie existed.
Until someone betrayed the king to the queen.
Betrayal is in the eye of the beholder.
Verlaine.